Welcome to Left Out with Adam Grimm and Logan Davis, a weekly show where we discuss all things sports, from the controversial to lighthearted topics around the country. Now let's go to the host. This is Left Out.
What's up, sports fans? It's Logan Davis.
And I'm Adam Grimm, recording from the 50-yard line at Faurot Field.
It's December 5th, and welcome to Episode 3. Make sure to follow us or subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter as well, at LeftOutOfficial.
Today we got coverage of the NBA schedule release, more NBA offseason moves, and a big day for both of us as college football fans. Let's get this show started now.
Let the game begin.
It's time to get this week started with the tip-off.
All right, so this week on the tip-off, we're going to talk about both of our college football teams, the Texas A&M Aggies and Missouri Tigers, both getting in action, both having great weeks. Logan, I'll let you talk about your Aggies first.
All right, it was a great day for our Texas A&M Aggies. We beat Auburn 31-20, I believe, and really impressed with the offense. Kellen Mond did really well, had a pick early in the first quarter. But it's a great time to be an Aggie fan. We're 8-1, I believe, and just super excited for what's to come. Great win over Auburn, and if we keep this up, maybe we'll make the fourth playoff spot. But there's definitely some holes in our defense, which we need to pay attention to. So come on, Jimbo, let's get our defense better.
Yeah, I was a bit skeptical of Jimbo Fisher at first. I know that down the stretch at Florida State, the program was not on the track that it was earlier in his coaching tenure. But I'm impressed with the job that he's done at Texas A&M. That offense looks really good. I mean, your defense played solid still. So props to them. And hopefully for you, they can get that fourth spot. I don't know if it will come, but I hope it does for them. My Missouri Tigers, what an emotional roller coaster of a day it was. It looked like it was going to be another one of those days where your heart gets broken as a Missouri fan. But they were able to pull it out. Nick Bolton getting ejected at the end of the first half on what could be considered a very controversial targeting call. I'll have more on that later. But the team looked lifeless then after that. They're down 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and then the offense just comes alive with Larry Roundtree, Tyler Beatty, Kiki Chisholm. All of them just start playing great. The Drinkwitz era is real at Mizzou, and it's going to be an exciting time. Also like to shout out the Thicker, Harrison Meavis. Had 5 field goals on a day, including the walk-off field goal. What a day for Missouri sports.
Yeah, no, I didn't watch the game, but just looking at the stats and just talking to you about it before this, just really exciting for Missouri and their football program. Just obviously they're going in the right direction. And yeah, that targeting call is definitely controversial. So we'll definitely get to talking about that, but great win for Missouri.
There's also another controversial call in that game. Receiver stepped out of bounds. Official caught it through his hat to signal that he had gone out of bounds. Then for some reason, they still gave him the catch instead of giving him the illegal touching penalty that it should have been. Don't know what happened there, but can't complain about the calls too much. I'm never one to complain about calls because I feel like calls always end up going both ways, but just glad to come out with the win and get on with a 500 record in his first season, full SEC schedule. It's pretty good. Let's hit the sports news of the week now.
Big news, sports fans.
Let's talk about the sports news from around the country.
Yeah, I know I'm not exactly the jockey type, but I watched Hoosiers last night, and I like sports now.
Here are the biggest stories in sports.
All right, so the first thing that we're going to talk about in the NFL is the odd week of postponements that the NFL had with the Ravens-Steelers game, but despite the Broncos being down all of their quarterbacks, their game did not get postponed. It's a really odd way to go about doing things for the NFL.
Absolutely. And yeah, having football on Wednesday was just really weird for me. I mean, I love free football, don't get me wrong, but a Wednesday afternoon watching Steelers and Ravens with the RG3 at quarterback, and then he gets injured, got Trace McSorley in. It was just kind of unfortunate to watch because that's not really the Ravens team. For the Broncos, it was just tragic. Poor COVID management by the 4 quarterbacks, and we watched a great performance with the receiver that was brought up from the practice squad. Just, yeah, I give him credit because this man had no practice reps and just came and played the game as hard as he could. So kudos to him.
Yeah, just put in a really tough situation, made the most out of it. I mean, he did what he could, so that's all that you could really ask. You couldn't have expected much. Also, something I thought was weird is that they put the game at 3:40 in the afternoon because NBC wanted to show the lighting of the Rockefeller Christmas tree. Very odd reason to schedule it when they did. I'm not sure I get that one.
Yeah, I think America would rather see the Ravens and the Steelers play than the Rockefeller tree being lit up, but that may just be my biased opinion, being a huge football fan. But yeah, I feel like that's very strange. 3:40, again, it was an awkward time on Wednesday, so not a huge fan of that.
Now staying in the AFC, Adam Gase has admitted that he failed to develop Sam Darnold properly. I think we can all see that, but it's a little strange to seeing a coach admit that he did such a thing.
Yeah, and I think Adam Gase realizes that he's on his way out from the Jets, obviously. They have double-digit losses. They haven't won a game yet. And, I mean, if you're Sam Darnold, you're obviously frustrated with how your performance has been. He's only thrown 6 touchdowns. And I think the Jets have just been an organization that is the definition of failure. And Adam Gase is obviously a big part of that. So I expect him to be out of the door, and him taking credit for that honestly just points to him trying to save some face before he's on his way out.
Yeah, the Jets really just need to clear house after this terrible season. They need to just restructure that entire organization. It's not working anymore. And I hope that Sam Darnold can find peace somewhere else, find a home somewhere, either in somewhere like Pittsburgh or Indianapolis, where he can sort of redevelop as a quarterback, be taught the ways to do things properly rather than how he was taught on the Jets, and get his career back on track. Because obviously as a number 3 pick, you're picked there for a reason. And so I hope for his sake that he can find somewhere else in his career to sort of get it kickstarted again. Now we're going to talk about some NBA news. Kyrie Irving blessing us all a little bit, saying that he will not be speaking to the media for the entirety of the NBA season.
This is probably one of the things I'll commend Kyrie Irving on. Not a really big fan of him ever since he left Cleveland. But thank you for not talking to the media. You said some very questionable things in the past years. And let's be honest, you need to let your game do the talking, because you missed pretty much all of last year with a shoulder injury. And Brooklyn needs some success. So yeah, Kyrie, I applaud you. Let your game do the speaking. And please just be quiet.
Mr. Flat Earther, hopefully we won't have to hear any more of his conspiracy theory takes that he seems to bring forward. He's a lot of stuff that's out there that really, really odd things to say usually. Also in the NBA, the Clippers. Apparently reports were coming out this week that a lot of the players on the team did not like how Kawhi and Paul George were given special treatment on the team last season. Could have led to some of their chemistry issues and their 3-1 collapse against the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, and I read like the article about it, and apparently like Kawhi and Paul George had their own personal trainers, and they could cancel practice whenever they wanted. And in the article, they said that Kawhi and Paul George literally chose the games they played in, not even based on their injuries or soreness. They literally just chose the opponents they played against. Which, if you're in that locker room, you're obviously not a fan of that. As we saw, Montrezl Harrell went to the Lakers. Like really went across the court, basically, to the team, because the culture there is just absolutely terrible. And Kawhi and Paul George have not been a good example of a leader in a locker room. So hopefully they turn that around and get rid of that special treatment. Because at the end of the day, teams win basketball, not just one man, unless your name is LeBron James. So
yeah, because you know that like all the superstar players are going to get different treatment than the rest of the players. That's just the reality of the hierarchy of the NBA. It's a superstars-based league. But just to be able to cancel practice, I can't even imagine why you would do that, how that would look to their teammates, anything like that. That's just very, very odd to me. I don't get that from how you can let that happen as a coach. Very, very strange stuff. In college sports, a lot of college football news. This was an interesting game tactic yesterday. Late in the Louisiana Lafayette Appalachian State game, Louisiana Lafayette up by 5 with 1:48 left. They take an intentional safety, which then allows Appalachian State to go the length of the field, only to lose the game on a 30-yard field goal missed. The coach said that it was the right move. He defended it, but in reality, he was just bailed out for this terrible coaching decision.
Absolutely. Yeah, terrible coaching decision. And yeah, once again, it kind of relates back to Adam Gase of trying to save face in making the decision. And yeah, I would never think an intentional safety would ever be a good idea. So, I mean, there also is a reason why he is the coach of ULL. So, yeah.
They're a top 25 team, though.
They may be a top 25 team, but there might be some questionable coaching hires for that team. So,
also in college football, BYU continues to not get the respect, although they're getting kicked around a little bit by Coastal Carolina right now. They had to find this game late, though. Coastal Carolina had to cancel their game with Liberty this week because of issues within the Liberty team with virus issues. And so they were able to get that game in late. It's a pretty good game to get only a few days before, I'll say.
Yeah, and I think obviously BYU is not being taken seriously just because they've obviously blown out all their opponents, but honestly their schedule is not impressive. They've blown out teams like Texas State. They've Western Kentucky, so not really these huge names. North Alabama is another example. So I think, yeah, they're not getting the respect they deserve because they're playing teams that are not in the top 25 or like any high football programs. But yeah, they're currently losing 22-17 right now to Coastal Carolina. So we'll see if there's an update or upset there. Excuse me.
And then a big game in college basketball today gets canceled. The number one and number two teams in Gonzaga and Baylor had to be canceled because of a player in the Gonzaga program testing positive. That would have been a great game. Gonzaga has been really impressive so far. Jalen Suggs, one of their top recruits, is a beast. I thought it was interesting earlier this week against number 11 West Virginia. He had what looked to be a pretty bad ankle injury, but he came back from it, talked the coach into it, and he appears to be healthy now. So glad for him on that front.
Yeah, and I think we're really gonna have to watch how college basketball is regulated for COVID and games missing and rescheduling because they play so many games in a week. So I will see, like, if someone gets COVID, let's say Gonzaga, you know, how many games is like going to be postponed because of that. There's just 36 games in a season. So you wonder how they're going to reschedule that. And then again, the question is, what is the March Madness going to look like? How are they going to be able to regulate COVID cases and stuff like that? So be on the watch for how the NCAA handles COVID.
All right, let's get talking to the release of the NBA schedule now.
It's showtime! And now, the main attraction.
This is what you've been waiting for. Our biggest discussion of the week.
Cool.
It's time for the main event.
All right, so obviously the big news in the NBA this week was the release of the schedule. There's some pretty intriguing matchups early on. They only released the first half of the schedule, so we only know that far. But there's some pretty intriguing games early on. Logan, I'll let you talk about which ones are intriguing you early on.
Yeah, so opening week of the NBA. Obviously, my Dallas Mavs are playing the Phoenix Suns, and I'm honestly excited for this game. Obviously, biased as a Mavs fan. But I'm really excited to see how Chris Paul and Devin Booker operate in that backcourt. I think they're, like, this, just looking at them on paper, I think they're a top three duo and in the backcourt. So I'm really excited to see that. Another game I'm really excited for is honestly the battle of the Lakers and the Clippers. I'm really excited to see if Kawhi and Paul George and their new team, I guess you could say, can face the reigning champs who now have Montrezl Harrell coming off the bench with them. So kind of some friendly competition will be good. And then not really in the early weeks, but I'm excited to see Kevin Durant come back to the Bay City and face Golden State with the Brooklyn Nets. Excited to see how Golden State welcomes him and see how KD operates in their new arena as well. And then, yeah, so back to you, Adam.
Yeah, I also have KD coming back to Golden State. And I also think that they play both on opening night as well against one another. There's a little bit of bad blood there between, especially like KD and Draymond Green. I know that they didn't leave each other on the best of terms, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in-game against one another. We also got Lakers-Clippers on opening night, just as last year. Should be a great one, as always, the battle for LA, those two teams going against one each other. I'm also super excited for your Mavericks going against the Lakers on Christmas in primetime television. LeBron James has pretty much been on Christmas and is in the primetime slot, the biggest day of the NBA season throughout his entire career. And he's been the face of the league for at least the past decade and might even be it for a little bit longer. But it's sort of like a passing on the torch moment now to Luka, who seems to be getting groomed towards being the next face of the league. I know you're excited about that.
Absolutely. We're loving that he's passing the torch. And then earlier, LeBron went on this like podcast, I think with Richard Jefferson, and said that he wanted to start like his own like Team LeBron section of Nike. And the first person he wanted to sign was none other than Boy Wonder, Luka Doncic. So super excited for Christmas. It's honestly the best Christmas present I could possibly get watching my Mavs on primetime. So, and then lastly, I think another game I also forgot to say is I'm excited for the Wizards and the 76ers. I know it's kind of a weird matchup, but I'm excited to see Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal kind of see how they mesh together in the new 76ers now with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. But Doc Rivers is now has like Seth Curry, my old Maverick, love you Seth, and Danny Green, seeing lining them around with shooters and see how they operate.
A couple more that I'm excited for. I'm excited to see the Wizards and Rockets match up against one each other, sort of the battle of this big point guard trade, one of the bigger trades throughout the offseason, now it would seem. I think that it's going to be pretty fun to see those two go up against each other. That's not until January 26th, though. And another big one that I have is Hornets and Pelicans, LaMelo and Lonzo going up against each other for the first time in the NBA as brothers. It'll be interesting to see them go head-to-head now versus whenever they played on the same team in high school. And I hope that we can get a Chino Hills reunion one time in the NBA, like LeVar Ball has said he wants to, with LiAngelo, LaMelo, Lonzo, and then even bringing in Onyeka Okongwu as well, as he was on that Chino Hills team. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would love a reunion of the Ball brothers and Onyeka. I butcher his name every time.
Onyeka Okongwu.
Thank you. That'd be awesome if they all pair together. However, I don't think LiAngelo is going to last long in the league, to be honest. I think Lonzo and LaMelo will be a good, fun matchup. Lonzo said that he's going to keep Melo in check because they've been playing against each other since they were little. So it's super exciting to see what the Ball brothers play out. But also, kudos to LeVar Ball for delivering his promise of delivering all three kids to the league. So way to go, LeVar.
Yeah, that's no slouch at all to be able to get three sons to the NBA. Him and the father of Drew, Justin, and Aaron Holiday as well. First time that, and the Antetokounmpos as well, they also have three brothers in there. So the first time, I think, in NBA history that three sets of three brothers are going to be in the league at the same time. Also, one more matchup I want to highlight that I'm really excited for, the Nets and the Lakers. Probably the two favorites in the NBA. They're matching up on February 18th. That should be a really good one at the Staples Center. So it'll be fun to see how the top two favorites really go up against each other for the first time.
I think the biggest question for the league is, will Kevin Durant come back to that superstar status after his Achilles? It's a brutal injury, and a lot of players don't come back from it being the same. So me personally, I think that Kevin Durant will be at the all-star level, but I don't think in the early games he's going to reach that superstar where he's nailing every three, being dominant on both ends of the floor. So it's going to take some time for KD to get back to where he was.
Yeah, his ability to play like he used to will certainly have one of the largest impacts on this NBA season and who will be the eventual champion. So it should be interesting to see what level he can play at. All right, now let's get on to our NFL and NBA stories for the week.
Hello, you play to win the game.
These are the headlines from around the league and association.
It's a make or miss league, baby.
So for the first time in this segment, we got a few smaller NBA things to break down. Starting off with the Wizards trading John Wall in a first-round pick for Russell Westbrook. We already hit on this a little bit earlier. We both have very strong thoughts about this, but Logan, I will let you start talking about it first.
Yeah, so obviously Russell Westbrook going to the Wizards. Russell Westbrook wanted out of Houston because he wants to play his type of game. He wants to play where he has the ball. He's doing triple-doubles every night. And he's just like the main ball handler. So I think in Washington will be a good fit because Bradley Beal can play very well off the ball. And I think them two will be a top 10 backcourt duo. I'm sad to see John Wall leave the Wizards, to be honest. I love John Wall growing up, and I hated to see him get injured, so he's been out for the past 2 years. But he's done so much for the community, and all Wizards fans just absolutely love him, and I wish him success in Houston. It's going to be hard to play against James Harden, though. I'm a very ball-dominant guard, obviously, and John either has to change his game a little bit, or maybe James Harden kind of steps back and changes his game so both of them can thrive. And I'm excited for Houston as well because John Wall, James Harden, and also DeMarcus Cousins. So John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins played college basketball together at Kentucky, and they were absolutely dominant. So seeing them now paired up together just makes me excited to see.
I think that this is an absolute win for the Wizards. They're giving up a guy who you don't know how this guy's going to perform. He hasn't played a full season since 2016-2017. And also people are talking about, well, he's a better shooter than Russell Westbrook. That doesn't make him a good shooter, though. Russell Westbrook's obviously one of the worst shooters as a guard in NBA history, but that doesn't make him a good shooter. He shot 33% and 35% from three in his last two full seasons. I'm talking about John Wall. And he's made one All-NBA team in his career. Russell Westbrook has 9 All-NBA selections. He has the MVP as well. He may shoot worse from three, but as an overall player, I think this is an absolute win for the Wizards. And they already have some good shooters to surround Russell Westbrook with, obviously with Bradley Beal being the main one who can play off ball and really complement him well, I think. But then also you have players like Davis Bertans, who's an absolute sniper, and even Thomas Bryant is starting to improve as a three-point shooter. Last year, he shot almost 41% on 2 threes a game, which isn't the largest sample size, but it's certainly not something to just scoff your eyes at, and I think that he can be somebody who can have a big impact on the team going forward.
All I'm going to say is, you can say that the Wizards have won this trade, but I'm not counting out John Wall. That man is a different breed, and I think he's going to have a great year. Might take him a little couple games, kind of like Kevin Durant, but I expect him to be very good in Houston.
I'm not saying I'm counting him out. I'm just saying that's a big, big question mark for me, and I would not be confident going in with that. Also, more NBA offseason news. Anthony Davis and LeBron James are both going to be with the Lakers for 4 more years. Anthony Davis finally re-signs with the 5th-year player option, obviously. LeBron signs a 2-year contract extension on his that will keep them with the Lakers until it is believed that Bronny will be able to go into the NBA.
Yeah, this is obviously a huge win for the Lakers and their organization. Having LeBron, obviously, you're always going to be contending for a title. And even as he gets older, I feel like he's going to continue to hand the keys more to Anthony Davis. LeBron has given up number 23 to Anthony Davis this season, so we'll see LeBron revert back to number 6 as he was in Miami. So that'll be cool to see. And I think just for the Lakers, they have championship aspirations, and I think LeBron and AD can at least win 2 more, and LeBron will have 6, and Michael will have 6, and the GOAT debate will once again be sparked.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Also, can't wait to see where LeBron will go after it to follow Bronny, I'm guessing. And I think an interesting question is, will AD follow a nearly 40-year-old Bron to be with his son and see if they can have continued success there as well? That should be a little bit interesting.
If LeBron plays with Bronny, I think as an NBA fan, my life will be complete. How cool would it be with one of the greatest players of all time, hooping with his son, who's 19, 20 years old, and LeBron's 40, 41. So that would just be crazy. I don't think the Lakers will be able to draft Bronny, so maybe LeBron will have to go to a bottom-fed team.
Yeah, he may have to, but he went to the Lakers whenever they were one of the bottom teams and turned that franchise around. So is any team really a bottom team with LeBron?
This is true. I mean, that's a fair. His last year in Cleveland, he definitely had one of the worst teams ever that he literally carried to the finals. So, yeah, I mean, he could go to the Charlotte Hornets for all we know. He could bring the Charlotte Hornets, him and Bronny.
And LaMelo.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so now going into the NFL, obviously young wide receivers are littered all over the NFL, putting up big numbers all over the league. I wanted to talk about some of the rookie wide receivers in the NFL who are already playing really well that have impressed you. Who do you want to start with?
I want to start with Justin Jefferson. He leads the lead in receiving yards for rookies, and he just has a real chip on his shoulder. I saw an interview with him, and he said that all the receivers taking ahead of him is just motivation for him to be better, and he's just really thriving alongside Adam Thielen in the Vikings offense, and he's got great route running. I was watching just highlights of a couple past games, and I mean, he's got it down. I mean, the corners are like skating around, and he just always didn't open, so I'm really impressed with him, and I hope that he continues this for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he slipped like he did in the draft below some of the other ones. I mean, other ones have been great as well, but just I don't see a hole in his receiving game. He has 52 catches, 918 yards, 6 touchdowns, averaging almost 20 yards per catch, and he also has a Pro Football Focus grade of over 90. that's really impressive from a rookie. I don't usually focus too much on their grades, but to be rated that high, you've got to be doing something right, especially along with that production. So I've been super impressed with him. Next guy I want to go to is somebody who has really flown under the radar this year, Jerry Jeudy. He has 37 catches, almost 600 yards, averaging 16 yards per catch, only 2 touchdowns, but he's doing this without a really great quarterback throwing in the ball like maybe Justin Jefferson has in Kirk Cousins, who's at least a decent quarterback. And he was also doing it without a number one receiver playing above him like Justin Jefferson has in Adam Thielen. So I think that he's been super impressive so far, despite the low attention that he has been getting.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy was phenomenal at Alabama. And like you said, I think the Denver quarterback situation has been the real problem that's been holding him back. But him having those stats with a shaky QB situation and honestly the Denver's offense, which is honestly very stagnant at times, I'm really impressed by him. And hopefully Denver figures it out, especially with their offensive line help and Drew Lock and stay healthy and stay on the field, which allowed Jerry Jeudy to get some more touchdowns and increase his receiving yards. So
I think getting Courtland Sutton back next year is going to help him a lot too. So he'll only go up from here. Also, I just wanted to shout out CeeDee Lamb and T. Higgins. Both have been really solid so far this year. They've been playing great. So shout out to them for putting up the production that they have been.
Yeah, CeeDee Lamb especially, with not having Dak Prescott at your quarterback. Got Andy Dalton and Ben DiNucci for one game. Oh, that was terrible. But very impressed with you, CD. You're the real one.
Also, you just reminded me, shame on you, Jerry. Playing with Ben DiNucci at quarterback is not the same thing as playing with a practice squad wide receiver at quarterback. You drafted this guy and you're going to slam him as an equal to a practice squad slot wide receiver. Shame on you, Jerry Jones.
Wasn't our best statement, Jerry, I'll be honest. Wasn't our best statement. But one more receiver I just want to shout out is Chase Claypool. Just really impressed with him. He has 45 receptions, 611 yards, and then 8 touchdowns, which is tied for 6th in the league. So he's just been Ben Roethlisberger's target, really good for the Steelers offense, and obviously has helped them be undefeated. So
yeah, really dynamic receiver for them. They can do a lot with him even in the running game as well. So he's been super impressive that he's been able to come in and have such an impact from a guy who really wasn't expected to do as much as he was. And it's time now to predict this week's NFL game, starting off with Saints-Falcons.
Yeah, okay, so I got I took the Saints. Even though the Falcons totally just destroyed last week, I'm not going to choose the Falcons ever, so I choose Saints.
I made a vow last week to never pick the Falcons again, and I'm going to stick to my guns and pick the Saints. The Falcons will probably win to upset my pick, but I don't care. I'm never picking them again. I'm going Saints. Lions, Bears.
I got the Bears. I think their defense alone will carry them. I think it's going to be an ugly game on both sides, though. So
yeah, that Lions defense is really bad, so I have the Bears as well. I think they do just enough to skate by. Browns, Titans.
I chose the Titans. I put them as a playoff or winning the division last week, and so I think I'm not really impressed with the Browns so far. Even though they're a winning team, congratulations to them, but I think the Titans are going to smash them. Derrick Henry probably rushed for 150 yards.
Yeah, some of their wins are super unimpressive, so I had the Titans as well. They really impressed me last week. I like some of the things that they did. Just got to get Derrick Henry going, and the rest will take care of it. Bengals, Dolphins.
I chose the Dolphins. Hopefully Tua gets healthy, and I can see more action of Tua, so more Tua time for me personally. But even with Fitzpatrick at the helm of the offense, they're doing what they need to do, and the defense is honestly doing a phenomenal job, and Brian Flores is doing a great job with the whole team.
Yeah, it's a shame that we won't get to see at least Joe Burrow in this game, possibly both of them. I hope we get to see Tua as well. I went with Dolphins. Defense is going to be too good for what the Bengals have on offense. Jaguars, Vikings.
Okay, the past 2 weeks I've gone against the Vikings. This week I'm going to go with the Vikings. I just think that the Jaguars are still shaky on offense, and yes, their defense is honestly mid-tier, but I think Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson get it done, and Dalvin Cook probably has a great day as well.
Yeah, there's just not enough there on the Jaguars, so I'm also going to go Vikings. Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook both have big days for my fantasy team in the playoffs. Raiders-Jets.
I chose the Raiders. This is my lock of the week. They have double-digit losses, no further statements.
Yeah, Jets are really bad. I think we're all going to go with the Raiders here. Colts, Texans.
I chose the Colts. I think this is the I think the Colts get back into rhythm and the offense, especially Phillip Rivers. And then I think Hines as well gets better on the running game. And I think the Colts defense picks up as well.
This is my upset of the week. I'm going with the Texans. Deshaun Watson has had one of the best seasons and is a winning team away from being in the MVP conversation. I think that he's been one of the best this year just based purely off stats. So I went with Texans. Giants, Seahawks.
Seahawks. Russ is going to cook. This is going to be a blowout.
Yeah, especially without Daniel Jones back there, possibly for the Giants. I have the Seahawks as well. Eagles, Packers.
Packers. I'm not going to choose for any NFC East team.
I am also going to go with the Packers this week as my lock over the Eagles. The Carson Wentz will not be able to get through that Packers defense.
Awesome. So the next team we have is, or the matchup is Patriots, Chargers. And I went with the Chargers because I think Justin Herbert, and their defense are going to stop the Patriots from coming back and letting the Chargers lose. So,
yeah, I don't think that the Patriots have enough juice on offense, and I like the Chargers to win as well. Broncos, Chiefs.
The Broncos are just a mess, let's be honest. They got to figure out their identity. They got to stay healthy on the field. And obviously you're going against the reigning Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes. So,
yeah, I think the Chiefs are the best team in the league right now, so I will also go Chiefs. Washington football team against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This is an easy one. It's going to be the Steelers. Once again, don't bet against an NFC East team. So
I don't think that it'll be an easy one, but I am also going Steelers. Washington, they're a pretty good football team, especially that defensive front. Little too many question marks on offense, but I do have the Steelers. Bills, 49ers.
I chose Bills. I think Buffalo's got a good thing going. Just keep the momentum. And I think the 49ers have too many questions at further positions of injuries. So
yeah, just a hard season for the 49ers with injuries. So I have the Bills as well. Cowboys, Ravens on Tuesday.
Okay, this is my upset of the week. Last time I put them to upset, they won. So I think with a Trace McSorley headed offense, the Cowboys will capitalize and we'll win a game. Let's go, boys.
You know Lamar Jackson's supposed to be back, right?
Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, well, he's still, you know what, I'm still going to stay true to the Cowboys, even though Lamar might be playing. I believe in you, boys.
I respect it. Stay true to your heart, but I'm going with the Ravens. The Rams and Cardinals in the game of the week. Who you got?
I chose the Rams. I think their defense alone is going to give Kyler Murray some trouble, but I just don't think Kyler Murray can produce with that much pressure, especially from Aaron Donald. So
I went with the Cardinals having a bounce back week from their loss against the Patriots last week in that matchup. Now it's time to talk some of the biggest college football news from today.
Now, maybe it's just me, but college was very confusing times.
It's the College Rundown, where we break down all the important stories in college football and basketball from this week.
All right, so our first story is a little bit of an interesting one. The Big Ten is considering waiving their requirements that they had initially set of a minimum of 6 games to get into their championship game. If Ohio State misses one more, obviously they want Ohio State to get into the college football playoff. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think what you just said. I think the Big Ten wants Ohio State to make it into the college football playoffs, and they want the Big Ten to be represented because Ohio State is their prize jewel, and every other team in that conference is an absolute joke. So they're gonna do whatever it takes to get them in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conference rule that was made up. It's not some sort of rule from the NCAA or the college football playoff. So I think it's something that you have to do to make sure that your conference is staying a little bit relevant, staying in that playoff, getting in there. So now we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about BYU versus Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina is able to win 22-17. It has just gone final. What are your thoughts on BYU?
They're nothing. I don't think they're a legit team. They just proved it by losing to Coastal Carolina. I don't buy the BYU hype. However, I applaud them so far on a great season, but I'm not buying it.
I was one of the people who had bought into them. I thought that Zach Wilson was a really good quarterback, but he struggled today. I put a little bit on this of they just had such a short preparation time, but Coastal Carolina obviously had the same thing. I thought that BYU is a really good team. They proved me wrong today, unfortunately. It was a tough circumstance, but to lose to... It was a great matchup between two 9-0 teams, I will say. But that offense just got shut down today. They could not move the football. So it seems as if I was proved wrong and BYU is not a legit team. Now I want to get on to something a little bit more personal from today on the targeting rule. Obviously, this stems from a hit by Nick Bolton late in the first half against Arkansas. It was pretty clearly to me to be shoulder-to-shoulder contact, but I'm not going to argue about the call here right now. I'm more of going to talk about what I think should be done to the targeting rule. So in basketball, whenever you have a flagrant foul, you have a flagrant one or a flagrant two. A flagrant one obviously gives the team free throws and the ball, so it's a pretty big call, and it's for something that is dangerous that is done within a game. But then there's the flagrant two for really the most egregious of calls, the most violent of intentions, and that's the one that leads to ejections. And I feel like that's something that the NCAA football should look to move towards with targeting. What are your thoughts on that, Logan?
Yeah, I think absolutely that there needs to be a kind of like a targeting one, targeting two kind of call. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I just watched a clip of Bolton's targeting. I mean, you said you weren't going to talk about the call, but I think it's ridiculous. And I think that change definitely needs to be made. And I hope that the big conferences and teams kind of make a plea that we need to review the rule book and change it for the better of the game.
Yeah, I mean, taking out one of your best defensive players in the conference for a call that you're not even sure was something that should have been called targeting, I'm not sure about it. But anyways, that's all that we have for college football this week. It's time to get this show wrapped.
It's been a blast, but it's almost time to go. We wrap up this week with the home stretch.
All right, so this week we're going to play a little bit of Time Traveler. We're going to go back and say, which moments in sports history would you change from a few different sports? Which NFL moment would you change if you could?
This is easy. 2014, NFC Division game in the playoffs. Dez caught it. No further statements.
So mine is dating back a little bit further, a little bit more of a domino effect type thing. Mine is the tuck rule of Tom Brady versus the Raiders in the snow. I think if they don't get that call there, then the Rams are able to win that Super Bowl that year, and the dynasty lives on with the greatest show on turf, and the fans stay more interested, and the franchise is not eventually moved to Los Angeles. What's your NBA moment?
2006 NBA Finals, Dallas Mavericks versus the Miami Heat. We were up 2-0, and then we lost the next four. Because Dwayne Wade had an absolute career playoffs, and there were some questionable calls by the referee. So I wish that Dallas had two championships and not one.
I'm not the biggest NBA fan, at least not in the past. So mine went back to a Derrick Rose's knee injury back in the playoffs that one year against the 76ers. I think without that, we have so much more in the NBA. I think the Bulls are still a relevant franchise. They're not in this awkward situation. We would have got to see Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler play together, and I think that they could have been a really good team. So I look back to that moment as something I would change. What's your college football moment?
My moment is Johnny Manziel not declaring for the draft. Johnny Football was absolutely incredible for Texas A&M, and once he declared for the draft and got drafted by the Browns, obviously you don't see him in the NFL anymore because he's out and he's done with football. And I feel like one more year at A&M maybe would have given us a chance at the national championship, but that's just me being a diehard Aggie fan.
Mine stems back to the 2013 SEC championship game. This isn't necessarily a moment, but more of a game plan decision. I wish that Missouri would have sold out to stop the run. Auburn had Nick Marshall at quarterback, a former cornerback. And I think had they sold out to stop the run, maybe that changes the outcome of the game. Maybe Missouri goes to a national championship and maybe they just get their first national championship in program history. What's your basketball moment?
Mine is once again dealing with Aggies. It's Robert Williams III, also not declaring for the draft. He was drafted, I believe, like 27th by the Celtics, and he's been just kind of a bench warmer, to be honest. And I feel like if A&M could have had him one more year, we could have made maybe a Final Four run. So I would love for Bob to stay one more year.
Mine states back to a call at Allen Fieldhouse. All teams who have played games against Kansas know that some fishy calls will happen there. And this goes to Phil Pressey getting called for a blocking foul versus Thomas Robinson. And I think without that call, That game doesn't go into overtime. Kansas does not get the win over Missouri, and Mizzou gets the number one seed in the tournament that year. And Norfolk State never happens as the smite of Missouri basketball fans. And now it's time for our bold predictions of the week.
General Kenobi, you are a bold one.
All right, so for my bold prediction, it's going to relate back to the Wizards with their trade for Russell Westbrook. I think that Russell Westbrook has a really good year that he continued on from the end of last year whenever he was not injured. I think both him and Bradley Beal make all NBA teams, and the Wizards end up being a top four seed in the East.
Wow. Okay. Top four team, all NBA team for both. That's very bold. I think my take might be more bold than yours. Dez Bryant plays the Cowboys this week, and I think Dez Bryant goes for 100 yards against the Cowboys in his revenge game after being released by my boys. So we'll see if Dez can do it.
That's bold. The guy off the practice squad, that is certainly a bold prediction. What are your final thoughts of the week?
This goes out to Paul George. In an interview, he was just describing how the team was feeling during their 3-1 choke against the Denver Nuggets, and he blamed Doc Rivers, their former coach, just for botching adjustments game to game, and he said that we deserved to lose the series. And honestly, it's not just about the player, it's not just about the coach when about adjustments. All players can make adjustments, and that was just a very childish move by Paul George, and I've lost a lot of respect for him ever since he joined the LA Clippers. So my final thoughts is, if your team did not succeed, do not blame the coach. Don't maybe look at yourself in the mirror and decide, what changes can I make so the next time this happens, it doesn't happen.
Mine goes out to the University of Missouri curators. It's time to keep Eli Drinkwitz happy. We clearly have the foundations for a really good program in the making with him. He's building culture within the team. He's building a lot of really good recruiting bases as well. This guy is the real deal. Build him this indoor practice football facility that he's asking for. You had already talked about it with the old coaching staff possibly building it. It's time to build it now. The program is becoming relevant again, and it's time that we keep it that way, keep Eli Drinkwitz happy, and really for the success of Missouri football in the future, this is an important project that can be accomplished. So that wraps up this week. Next Wednesday, actually, we will have our first special episode where we will be ranking all 30 of the newly released NBA City jerseys. So be on the lookout for that.
Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next week.